This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Before the top of the hour, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online tsn1290.ca. Big thanks to Chris Dingman for joining us to talk about the Tampa Bay Lightning. The Lightning and the Jets, of course, 6 p.m. tonight on this fine station. This segment of the program is brought to you by Royal Sports. Since 1974, Royal Sports has been Winnipeg's number one hockey shop, plus so much more, like soccer to snowboards. For locations, hours, and more, check them out online at royalsports.me. A reminder, tomorrow, 1 p.m. until 3 p.m. at the Royal Sports location at 750 Pembina Highway, Jacob Trouba is going to be live in store. You can come down, get autographs from Jacob, and participate in a saucer pass competition. It's all brought to you by Sherwood Hockey. So again, tomorrow, 1 p.m. to 3 p.m., 750 Pembina Highway, Royal Sports presents Jacob Trouba.
Yep, definitely go check that out. Have a chance to get an autograph from Jacob Trouba as well. We'd like to announce that Michael Remus is going to be having a Sour Soother Pass competition outside of the TSN 1290 radio studios. So come by, Michael will sign your hockey sticks and jerseys, and you can pass some Sour Soothers with Michael.
You know, I just looked up the nutritional information on those.
It's depressing. Don't talk about it.
I won't be eating as many. Richard, you ate a lot.
I did eat a lot.
I'll be limiting it at
Reem, there's a lot of glucose fructose in those.
You don't want to know what else.
Okay, let's talk about the upcoming Winnipeg Jets schedule with the glucose and fructose. You guys threw me off there. With 14 games to go, the Jets,
foreign concept for you, Drew.
Yeah, I know. With 14 games to go, the Jets 1 point behind the Los Angeles Kings for the final playoff spot in the Western Conference, 2 points behind the Vancouver Canucks, and of course 3 points behind both the Calgary Flames and the Minnesota Wild. The Flames defeating the Toronto Maple Leafs last night, the Minnesota Wild losing at home to the Anaheim Ducks last night.
You know, Drew, just as an aside, there's nothing more depressing than watching the Toronto Maple Leafs these days.
Oh, God, they're awful.
I mean, I can't imagine someone actually who isn't a season ticket holder paying to go watch that team at Air Canada Center. Like, it's not even like they're in these games at all.
Yeah.
Like, they got smoked by Calgary.
They gave up two shorthanded goals on a five-minute major last night. I mean, that tells you pretty much all you need to know. A colleague of mine at the office was actually at Wednesday's Sabres-Leafs game.
Who would go to that?
He didn't pay for it. Let me preface that immediately. He didn't pay for it. He said it was the worst hockey game he's ever seen. And at a point in time, I think in the second period, he could hear like the full conversations of people the section over. It was such a morgue-like atmosphere at the Air Canada Center. And he said the hatred and the anger and the frustration in the city of Toronto over their hockey team is completely palpable. There's so much bitterness, surrounding that organization right now. As a person from Winnipeg, I enjoy, the schadenfreude aspect of the whole thing. Anyways, the Jets, 14 games to go. Don't shake your head at me, Richard. 14 games to go between the Jets and the end of the season. How many wins do they need? How many points are they going to require to get into the playoffs in your mind?
It's a moving target, of course, Drew. But, I mean, if you're going to go beyond them, say, okay, 96 points is that threshold, and we don't know if it is or isn't. You need 9 wins. I mean, simple math. You need 9 wins out of 14 here. And that's a tough task because their schedule is very difficult. And especially we were looking at it during the break, we were looking at the LA Kings schedule, which we've spoken about on the show before, and it's been spoken about on the station at length, the Vancouver Canucks schedule. These are teams that have pretty easy schedules as compared to the Winnipeg Jets. You know, the Jets go to Tampa, very tough team. Then you come back and you play Tuesday against the Sharks in a really significant game. Not that they aren't significant, but that's especially because the team right behind you. Then you play the Blues again, and then you play the Washington Capitals, who aren't playing well right now, by the way. But those are three very difficult games, and no easy nights anymore. And so it's going to be tough for sure. 9 wins. We did the exercise a couple weeks ago, picking games that they would win.
Yeah,
or they needed to win. We thought they could win, and it looked like it was pretty promising. But again, and when you don't beat Florida's and you don't take advantage of
you don't beat Toronto,
you don't take games like the St. Louis one into overtime, and you don't beat Toronto, you are going to put yourself in a very difficult position.
Yeah, and back to how many wins. I think Richie's right. 9 wins is probably what you need to be sure that you're going to get in. Maybe 8 wins gets you in, Richie, but probably 9 out of 14 games. And, you know, Calgary and LA are their biggest competitors right now. You could throw in Vancouver, and you could throw in San Jose there. San Jose obviously needs to make a run here. But, you know, you talk about the LA Kings, you mentioned the schedule. They're going to need some help. And the LA Kings play the Nashville Predators tonight, which isn't going to be an easy game, but they're at home, and they're better at home than they are on the road. But then you've got the Coyotes coming up. So then you've got the Ducks. So they do have 2 of the next 3 games are hard. And then they do have 5 games coming up on the road, and you do have some tough games in there against teams like the Rangers, the Islanders, the Wild, and the Blackhawks. So the Kings have a little bit harder of a schedule, Richie, than the Flames. But again, the Kings are playing well right now. So.
And the other thing is, you know, that is a tough road schedule, of course, as you're going back on the East Coast and all that. But the Kings are one of these teams that just seems to win when they need to. Mm-hmm. And it's tough when they have that experience, right? And so when they go up in those games, I mean, the Rangers are playing some good hockey right now. But some of the other teams, I don't know if anybody else would say that they're significant underdogs, if underdogs at all in any of those games. And they've been there before. And, you know, if the Jets were to, say, lose tonight and the Sharks beat the Hawks this afternoon, you're looking at a tie in the standings with the same amount of games played actually behind them because you lose the tiebreaker. So it's that other thing is that you don't want to let other teams squeak by you. And chasing a bunch of teams is a very difficult task in the era of 3-point games. So the Jets have put themselves in a difficult position, guys. You lose to Ottawa. You know, you blow the end of the game against St. Louis. You lose to the Florida Panthers. And again, you're not losing these games in overtime.
Yeah.
And you seem to be kind of coming apart in terms of your composure. They put themselves in a tough position now.
Well, you look at the games that, you know, when we started this exercise, you look at the games we said the Jets should have won.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've lost 3 of those. Ottawa, Florida, Toronto. I mean, that means you have to come back. And I mean, they won one that we thought they would have lost against Nashville. But you still got 2 more. You got to at least win. Never mind. Well, you need more than 2, obviously. You know, if you look at their schedule right now, games that they, quote unquote, should be the favorite in. You know, there's the one home game against San Jose, you'd say, at Edmonton and at Colorado.
Home to Vancouver.
Home to Vancouver, sure, I'll grant you that one too. And probably home to Calgary, but even the way Calgary's been playing, I mean,
still say favorite, 4
or
though, the
5
home team.
Games, you know, at home that, you know, you think that they should win, which you're means right, you're going to have to start stealing 3-4 games where you're the quote-unquote underdog.
That's just it, stealing games.
Yeah, if you're talking about having to win 9 of 14, then you're talking about having to do winning 3 of 4 games twice, most likely, right? So the next 4 games coming up, obviously Tampa Bay tonight is a must win. They're all must wins. And then with the homestand coming up against Washington, San Jose, and St. Louis, you got to win 2 of those 3 games. So however many of those games, or which teams, pardon me, Drew, that you want to pick, they got to win 3 of these 4 games to be back in a playoff spot, because you're not going to win winning 2 of 4 games anymore. 500's not going to cut it, right?
No, you got to be up closer to it. Points percentage probably of 750 is your points percentage you probably need from here on out, to give or take. You know, looking at it, is there one team you think that, you know, is most vulnerable for the Jets to catch?
To me, it's Calgary. And again, I got to say, I was tweeting about this the other night watching the Calgary Flames. I hope the Calgary Flames get in. Obviously, not at the expense of the Winnipeg Jets and their fans. But to me, it's Calgary because you still don't have Giordano. And you're a young team. And this was a team that, even though the expectations weren't high, Richie, I think that's benefited them. But to me, can this team down the stretch, can they get... Because Calgary right now, they might have an easy schedule. And if you look at the schedule, you know, you're talking about they got Colorado tonight, then they have St. Louis on Tuesday, but then you got the Flyers, the Blue Jackets, the Avalanche again.
The Stars.
You've got the Stars in there again, and then you've got the Oilers coming up in April. It's really an easy schedule, but having said that, they still got to win those games.
Yeah.
And those teams, especially the teams...
They've got 5 games against teams that are currently in the playoffs.
Right, but when you're talking about Colorado, for example, and I realize that they've been playing not bad lately. I realize they don't have McKinnon, but... They're spoiling. I mean, the Colorado Avalanche, for all intents and purposes, aren't in the McDavid sweepstakes. They're not quite at that bottom. So you're talking about a team that's going to want to beat the Calgary Flames. That's what they're playing for right now. They're playing spoilers. So to me, if it's in between Calgary and LA, as far as teams falling off, for me, it's probably Calgary, just because LA has so much experience, and they always seem to turn it on this time of year.
Yeah. I think probably... The team that I think is the worst of the bunch that they're chasing is Vancouver.
I would agree with that.
That's my perspective. As I for sure see what you're saying in terms of the injury to Giordano. So Calgary seems to just have that mojo, and they play hard and all that. Mm-hmm. So I think it's kind of a coin flip here. So I'll take the other side of it, and I'll say Vancouver. But having said that, Vancouver doesn't exactly have a tough ride here either.
They have they have five games as well against non-playoff teams.
So, I mean, that's, again, the
five games against playoff teams. I misspoke.
And they have 15 games left.
Yeah, so they have 10 games against non-playoff teams. They finish against home to Arizona, home to Edmonton, which are home to two wins, you'd think.
They're up on the Jets, 2 points with the tiebreaker and a game in hand. There's only 14 games left here, guys, for the Jets. So, I mean, that's a pretty significant margin. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that the non-playoff teams that they play, you don't have to be that good to beat some of those teams. Some of these teams have mailed it in.
You need teams like Vancouver or Calgary to lose games they should win, like the Jets have done.
Yep.
And so far, there's no evidence that Calgary is going to do that. I mean, you saw what they did to Toronto yesterday, just stepping on their throats, mm-hmm. not giving them a second. Mm-hmm. Not that the Leafs haven't mailed the entire season in, of course.
They have mailed it in, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's Eric DeHatchik on Twitter yesterday watching that game, I think had the best tweet of the year, in saying, how did Randy Carlyle have this team above 500?
And people don't talk enough about that.
Yeah.
We mentioned on the show when they fired him.
Yeah.
That didn't think that was a solution. And that, by the way, lots of people thought that was the solution. And then talking about the process of making sure they were out shooting the other team, that was all garbage.
Yeah.
This team's given up. This team's an embarrassment to hockey right now.
I agree with you there. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the Johnny Boychuk contract extension and what mm-hmm. it might mean for Dustin Byfuglien. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
5 minutes before the top of the hour here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, let's talk about Johnny Boychuk. Signs a big contract extension with the New York Islanders. It's a 7-year contract extension, $42 million. He gets $6 million a year to play for the Islanders for the next 7 years. What were your initial thoughts on this deal? The Islanders getting deals done with both Boychuk and Nick Leddy, the two guys they acquired right before the season started. Too much money? Right amount? What do you think on this deal for Johnny Boychuk?
Well, interesting to know that. I mean, Drew, Boychuk's a lot older than Leddy is.
Of course.
Boychuk's 31.
And was set to be an unrestricted free agent at season's end.
And there's a lot of rumors he's going to go back to Edmonton, where he's from. But I like Johnny Boychuk as a defenseman. If you listen to this show, you know I have since years ago in terms of his Boston. I thought he's an underrated guy. I think getting a lot of the accolades he so deserved. Is it a little bit long? Yeah. The money-wise, I think he can be a top-pairing guy, so I don't really have an issue with the $6 million. Maybe you're a little more comfortable with $5.5 or so. Apparently, the Islanders had to go up to $6 to get it done. But to think about the effect that he's had on this team, pairing him on the right side, pairing him with a guy like Nicoletti, whoever they want to pair him with on an ongoing basis, having him and Hamonic on the right side, Hamonic's sweetheart of a deal that they have, you combine both those guys for long-term, it's really not costing you a ton of money. It's under $10 million, I believe. So if you look at it big picture wise, you don't have a huge issue. The last couple of years might be an issue. I think he's improved his skating over the course of his career and might, cause problems later when he slows down a bit. But impactful defenseman. They've acquired Leddy and Boychuk for really very little, and they're able to sign both of them to long-term deals. I really like the job that Garcinot's done. I have no issue with it.
Yeah, Richie, I agree with you. I really like Johnny Boychuk too, Drew. And as Richie mentioned, now you have Nick Leddy, Johnny Boychuk, and Travis Hamonic signed long-term. So half of your top 6D is signed long-term. All really good defensemen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Boychuk, I agree with Richie, very underrated guy who's part of that team that won the Stanley Cup in 2011. And if you look at Boston, what are they missing right now? They're missing Johnny Boychuk because they had the cap issues. And they have some good defensemen there, Dougie Hamilton and Torrey Krug. But Johnny Boychuk is big. He's physical. He's pretty good offensively as well. And Garth Snow's done a really good job here. You can tell that Garth Snow sees where this team is, and with moving to the Barclays Center in Brooklyn next year, so much young talent there. Richie, you throw in Calvin DeHaan and some of the guys that haven't even played, the forwards that are coming up, Ho Sang and Dal Cole and all these guys. Tons of good prospects, but. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the contract is front-loaded, so he gets less money towards the end of the contract, right?
I think I read something like that. So, in terms of actual salary paid on a year basis.
Richie, the way I look at it, too, if you're signing a guy who's 31 until he's 38, you could say, well, as soon as he gets to around 34, 35, mm-hmm. so look at a guy like maybe Brad Stewart. But they're paying him less, and as you mentioned, they pay him a little bit more, $6 million a year at the beginning, knowing that towards the end of the year. But I think as well, what that does, when you look at the today's salary cap and the fact that you can only sign your own players to 8 years and teams players on other teams to 7 years. What you're doing is you're ensuring that basically he finishes his career with the Islanders. Yeah. So you don't he's not right. a UFA when he's 36 years old, for example, right? That's what might happen if you sign him to a five-year deal. Maybe you're in a situation where now close to the trade deadline, he's 34, 35 years old, and now you have to worry about, okay, am I going to sign him to 1 year, more year? I think that gives him a lot of certainty and comfort knowing that he's going to be with one team for – I mean, sure, he might play till 39 or 40, but I think we could agree that the it's probably going to be the most of the rest of his career is with Islanders.
And the truth is Travis Hamonic's agent didn't do a very good job. I mean, we don't know if he took instructions in terms of signing that long-term deal, but he's way under market value now and will be for a long time.
You could argue that he's a $7 million defenseman, $8 million defenseman.
It's a lot of money. But, I mean, he's certainly worth more than the contract that he's on right now. So if you couple them together, you're saying to yourself, okay,
sure,
I'm fine with that right side. And that right side is a tough right side. You try and get through the left side boards there, you get crushed. I like the moves. Garth Snow has done a nice job with that organization. He was chastised a lot at the outset, and he made some questionable decisions. But if you look at
Rick DiPietro,
if you look at the job he's done in a big picture, he's done a very good job of accumulating talent, letting the talent develop, signing reasonable contracts. Nielsen, Poso, Hamonic, and Tavares, and that's afforded him the ability to bring in some guys and pay these guys money.
Sure. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. When we come back, one final hour of hockey coverage. You're listening to TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Two hours down, 1 hour to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, producer Remus, doing his magic to get us on and off the air. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. This segment of the show is brought to you by Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard is a must-have piece of protective equipment. Don't be an Ezzy. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. And speaking of the Linden Market Dental Center, we're pleased to welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Dr. Les Rykus from the Linden Market Dental Center. How are you, Les?
I'm really well, thanks. How are you guys doing?
We're doing very well. Thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. We brought you on to talk about mouth guards, as we generally do a couple times a year on this show, to emphasize the importance of them for young athletes. But, as a season ticket holder, how are you feeling about your potential April investment of playoff tickets?
Oh, boy. It's a tough one right now. We've gone through so many injuries that they've managed to get through, but it just seems like we're just coming up to a really steep slope right now. I don't know. I'm hoping that come April we're looking a little bit different than we are today.
Well, if they get any more defensive injuries, you might be putting on the skates and then playing some D minutes for the Jets in the next couple of weeks.
You don't want to see that.
Les obviously brought you on. Talk about mouth guards, and start with sort of the general question. You hear a lot about the importance of them. From your perspective as a dentist, a professional who sees mouth and teeth injuries on probably a daily basis, how preventative and how much importance do you put behind people wearing mouth guards when they're playing amateur sports?
Well, I can only go back to a few years ago when I was hitting the mouth with a puck, direct shot, and I was wearing my mouth guard and I had no damage. So without it, the damage is significant, whether it's to the teeth or to the jaws. So absolutely, it's a valuable piece of equipment and one that should not be overlooked.
Talking about mouth guards with Dr. Les Rykus here on the Linden Market Dental. On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Les Rykus of the Linden Market Dental Center.
True, going under the operating.
Yeah, exactly. How difficult? You hear about the different mouth guards that are available on the market. Some of them are you boil them at home. Do those ones work as well as the ones you would do, say, in a professional dentist office?
Well, let's start off by saying that any mouth guard is better than no mouth guard. The fact of the matter is, you used to be able to buy a, we like to call them a boil and bake mouth guard, where you put it in the pot, let it boil, softens up, and you mold it in your mouth. They used to sell them for about $5. Now they're a lot more expensive. They're looking at somewhere between $20 and $40 in the store. So right away now you're approaching a custom fit mouth guard price. And really, there is absolutely no similarity between the two. You're talking about the difference between one that is loose inside your mouth and bulky versus one that fits perfectly for your teeth and only your teeth. So either way, have a mouth guard in your mouth, but if you really want to do yourself justice, you go ahead and have a custom one made.
Hi, Les. This is Ezzy from your commercial.
Hey, Ezzy. How you doing?
I wanted to ask you, you know, for those who are just getting into hockey or who hopefully aren't just getting a mouth guard when they play hockey, but how easy is it to come see you and get a mouth guard for not just hockey but for all sports?
Well, it's very simple. I mean, you can come into my office and you can have your custom fit guard done by the next day for sure. You know, it's a very, very simple thing to make, and it just requires an impression of your teeth. So it's really simple these days.
We're talking about mouth guards with Dr. Les Rikus of the Linden Market Dental Center. And Les, you know, everybody nowadays is concerned with concussions and the impact of concussions, that, you know, be it at professional athletes, we've seen the impact, or, you know, on amateur athletes who might get their bell rung in the course of a game. You know, what about mouth guards in the prevention of concussions? Is there any sort of evidence to that effect?
Absolutely there is. It's a shock preventer. Any reduction in shock to the head is a good thing. We know the advantages against teeth breaking and things like that, but you're right. With concussions, wearing a mouth guard is one of those things that's going to help reduce the concussion syndrome.
We were talking about this before the show, Ezzy and I were, and there's, you know, we were sort of talking about Gatorade and how it's marketed as a performance enhancer, and it's, you know, gets you back into, you know, into peak physical condition. There's now a mouth guard that's advertising something similar, a performance mouth guard made by Under Armour. You've done some research, you know, leading up to this interview. What can you tell us about this new Under Armour mouth guard that's being offered in retailers?
Well, it's been out for a couple of years now, and if you take a look at the mouth guards being worn by a lot of the NHL players, you'll see that little Under Armour symbol right in the front. And their motto is stronger, faster, better. You know, when you're competing, you're clenching, which constricts your airway, and you end up releasing a lot of cortisol, and this hormone will cause an increase in stress and fatigue. So what they're saying is they've got this power wedge technology, and it's like a bite plane. It keeps your mouth open a little bit more, which opens up your airways a little bit more. And what this guard is suggesting is that it'll allow you to perform at a much higher level. It'll allow you to breathe more, you know, decrease your lactic acid, and increase your performance by about 12%.
Les, we appreciate your time this afternoon, and hopefully we'll be able to see you back at the MTS Center in mid-April for the Jets getting on into a playoff run.
Looking forward to seeing you guys, and great show. Loving every minute of it, guys.
Thanks very much, Les. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. The importance of mouth guards. Thank you to Dr. Les Rikus for joining us to talk about that. You know, it's true. You know, I don't know about you guys, but when I played amateur sports, I never wore a mouth guard, and probably because it was a function of the time at that point in time where it wasn't as essential, or it wasn't known to be for its... you know, it wasn't just a mandatory part of equipment.
Right, and you know...
I'm just shocked somebody didn't put a mouth guard in your mouth to shut you up.
Okay, but back to you know, what Les is saying, Richie. It's very important. And I think, you know, the question that you asked Les about concussions really, Drew, is the most important. If you're a young hockey player, you got to wear a mouth guard. It's just that important. It's just as important as a helmet, shoulder pads, shin pads. It really is. And as Les said, it's easy to get from him. And so it's important. And again, Drew, you know, we come from a different generation, and not as much was known about concussions. Obviously, we knew what concussions were, but, you know, the
seriousness of them.
Yeah, the importance of having that. And there's other reasons as well, obviously. You know, you can lose teeth and you bite your tongue, and there's a bunch of different reasons why mouth guards are important to wear in hockey. And again, other sports as well, but... you know, it's something that, especially, I look at young kids that are playing hockey, and we always made sure. I remember last time Richie and I coached, that was about 4 years ago or so, We always made sure that they had their mouth guards in, and actually the referees in minor hockey make sure that the kids have the mouth guards in. So, you know, times have changed, and it's, again, just really important to have one.
Also, it's very important to not be an Ezzy, so wear your mouth guard. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about Nikolai Ehlers and where his development is best suited in the 2015-16 season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
Gaslight Anthem.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Ezzy referencing that because at the beginning of the show, Richard asked Remus to play. Richard's going to see that band tonight.
Yeah, Richie's going to see Gaslight Anthem tonight. And before the show, Richie goes, I hope Remus plays a lot of Gaslight Anthem, like at least 4 or 5 Gaslight Anthem songs, but he's probably only going to play them once.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, Remus is consistent, at least. You got to give him credit for that.
Well, Gas Anthem came out with a song that was after 1995, so there's no way it's getting on this show.
Remus does like his, guess what's that? If you're a band from the mid-90s, what's
grunge.
Is Tom that grunge?
Petty, yeah. And then, like, he played Zeppelin before. Usually you get a little Metallica, yeah, some STP. Mm-hmm. I know Remus' favorites, and don't worry.
Anyways, welcome back to the program here on TSN 1290. 6 p.m. tonight, the Jets and the Lightning live from Amalie Arena in Tampa Bay, where the Jets will look to end their losing streak, having lost 3 of their last 4 games. The future of the Winnipeg Jets, or one of the members of the future of the Winnipeg Jets, is Nikolai Ehlers, playing for the Halifax Mooseheads in the QMJHL this year, and absolutely lighting it up, of course. 95 points for the Moosehead in 47 games played, 35 goals, 60 assists, and fans of the Winnipeg Jets have been watching and following his performance all season long and getting more and more excited as his point streak tends to keep increasing. It ended up, 28 games it finally ended at the other day? I don't exactly know
I think
exact
that's
number.
Right.
You know, the question to be asked, if he doesn't make the Winnipeg Jets next year, where is he best off for his development? Of course, keeping in mind he's not eligible to go to play in the American Hockey League. Is there an argument to be made that perhaps his development is best off playing overseas against professionals in Europe rather than playing a final season in the QMJHL?
This is my concern about having the AHL in Winnipeg. We're going to dissect every little thing about this team. He'll stay in the QMJHL for another year, and then he'll play in the NHL if they don't think he's ready. He probably will be ready. And they have a bunch of guys who are UFAs, so they're going to have a lot of openings. I think he'll be playing in the NHL next year, but if he's not, he'll play in the QMJHL. I don't think we need to overanalyze this.
Well, no, it's not a question of overanalyzing. It's just having a discussion, Rich. I mean, I think it's worth having the discussion because Nikolai Ehlers, 95 points, he's going to most likely have more than 100 points. And granted, we don't know how good he's going to be in the NHL. Look at Jonathan Drouin has 2 goals in 60 games this year, right?
Yep.
So I agree with you, Rich. I think there's a good chance that Nikolai Ehlers plays in the NHL. He has just so much high-end skill that I think that even though guys like Nick Petan have high-end skill, I don't know. I think Nikolai Ehlers is a step above Petan as far as what he can do. If you watch some of the moves he has, and not only that, but his defensive awareness, I think to me, if he doesn't play in the NHL next year, Rich, he can't play in the AHL. I think I would make the argument that he has not much to learn in the QMJHL that he hasn't already learned. And the reason why I would argue that he would be better off, for example, playing in the Swedish Elite League, which I think would be an option for Nikolai Ehlers, because then he's going up against pros and he's now challenged to raise his game to a different level. That's the point I would make. I think that, Rich, I know what you're saying. I mean, Nikolai Ehlers, there's a good chance he plays again in the CHL. We saw that with Josh Morrissey. But I think it's just it's an interesting thought, and I think it's something that I would think that the Jets management and player development are thinking about as far as if he doesn't make the team next year, would he be better suited off to play in Europe? That's all I'm saying.
His point streak, Richard, was actually 33 games where he accumulated 78 points in those 33 games.
He plays the right side, right? I believe. But he's an off-wing player. Again, I haven't seen Nikolai Ehlers play, so aside from on video. And right side guy, who do the Jets have on the right side? Stepniak, UFA, Stafford, UFA, Frolik, UFA. So, and who do they have in the system? They haven't called up a forward all season, basically. Odell was like forced upon them. They hardly had Klingberg, but then they traded him. So unless they're going to go out and sign a bunch of wingers, which is possible, I guess, they're going to have guys who have high skill level and come at the cheap. And if they think his development's done there, then they'll bring him up, and they'll, you know, he's obviously very, I've seen him play in person on, I guess, one occasion or two occasions. I was impressed. He reminds me of Patrick Kane. He seems like he's already talented enough to play in the league. But I haven't watched him this year at all. I don't know if he's, you know, if the game has changed. I didn't really catch him much in the World Juniors. But I think by necessity, it might be a factor, and worst comes to worst, they'll send him back. I don't think you need to, you know, change the way things are done. I really don't. No offense, Ezzy. I understand what he's saying about playing with men, but if he's going to play with men, you play him in the NHL. That's what I think.
Yeah, and I guess that the option of playing in Europe is if he doesn't play in the NHL, right? The argument is if he doesn't play in the NHL next year, where does he play? And I think when you look at how successful players like Johnny Gaudreau have been, and we're going to hear these arguments about both Nick Petan and Nick Ehlers. Nick Ehlers is a little bit bigger than Nick Petan, but he's not much bigger than Nick Petan. Nick Petan's obviously only about 5'7". So,
Sorry for interrupting. Let me just jump in there quick. I think there is a significant skill. There's a significant gap between the skill set of Nikolai Ehlers and the skill set of Nick Petan.
I think the gap is skating. That's the biggest gap. That's the difference.
I would say that, and just overall, I think he's a more skilled player.
I agree.
Higher draft pick, and he's tearing up the QMJHL. Nick Petan's obviously had some struggles. Nick Petan's going to be a good pro hockey player, but I just think there's a significant step up there, and no offense to Nick Petan. I think Ehlers is a guy that 1 year after being drafted, as Richie mentioned, just because of how much skill he has, he's going to really make it hard for the Winnipeg Jets to send him back. And again, that's even more reason why If he's on the third line or fourth line, or if maybe he doesn't play some games, I think there's something to be said by having him up with the Jets this year. And again, I agree with you, Rich. I really think that, and again, that goes back to you have to be 20 to play in the AHL. You can go in the playoffs. We saw Josh Morrissey play with the Ice Caps in the playoffs last year, and he did pretty well. But when you're in that situation where a player's too good, I think Josh Morrissey's in that situation right now. I mean, what more does he have to gain in the QMJHL? I think the one thing
in the
would
WHL.
Be, sorry, yeah. WHL would be a Memorial Cup. Kelowna is a really good team.
Sure.
As you mentioned, Drew, off-air, Kelowna's second to the Brandon Wheat Kings of the WHL. But I think this is all a good problem for the Jets to have. Nikolai Ehlers, and again, this goes back to the hockey news, having Ken Campbell on last week about this, they have the best prospects in the NHL. Or some of the best prospects in the NHL, whatever you want to say. So it's a good problem to have. If Nikolai Ehlers is making it hard for the Jets to not send him back to the QMJHL, that means he's going to be in the NHL and he's going to be learning how to play the game. He might struggle.
The best prospect thing, and the Hockey News article was ridiculous. I mean, obviously that was a joke.
You weren't here last week.
Why don't we predict who's going to win the Cup this year first before we worry about who's going to win the Cup in 2019?
Well, we had Ken on, and Ken said it's obviously tongue-in-cheek.
Of course it is. It's to sell magazines. That's fine. But the best prospect group, does that mean you have the best high-end prospects? Does that mean you have the best depth in your system? And it depends on the definition of what the best depth, what the best system
is. Just to
is.
Clarify what you're saying, Rich, they did include Mark Scheifele and Jacob Trouba in there.
Because they were best prospects, I think, under the age of 20 or 21 is what they used as their benchmark. The guys who would be peaking or the guys who would be the core of your team, you know, 4 years from now. But I don't want to talk about the Hockey News article anymore. I mean, we've talked about that enough.
Calgary's got a pretty good stable of young players, too.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that the Hockey News took that.
So the 23-year-old, I mean.
Yeah, they're going to win the Cup in 2020, Rich.
Yeah, you know, 20. Oh, God. Anyhow, I just think like this. You want this day and age, you have to come out with the most ridiculous things and blow everything out to try and get a story. Reporting.
They're in the market to sell magazines. I don't have a problem with them trying to sell magazines, and I'm sure they were successful at doing it.
You pick the market who's craving national attention.
Yeah.
And then you just and that's how you
Yeah. It's called selling magazines. I don't know what, you know, you're gonna live in your if you're gonna go live in your hut in the woods where there's no capitalism and no commercialism, Richard, that's one thing at all. But I mean,
are you an economist right now?
I'm not an economist.
I'm just telling you the article it's hilarious that you're trying the title is going to win the Cup in 2019. We live in a cap world where so many of these guys can't even be kept by the same teams, where you have incidents happen this year, like Evander Kane getting out of town based on an incident in the locker room, and we're going to pretend like anybody can actually take it seriously about some kind of like fake prediction, never mind the fact that like the prospects, half the guys who talk about these prospects have never even seen them play.
I'm sorry. I can't take it seriously. Like, it's like the guys who tell us Connor Hellebuck should be up here in the National League. Have you ever seen him play goal? Like, who knows?
Well, Rich, you even said it. I think the title of the article, it was tongue in cheek, and we talked to Ken Campbell of the Hockey News about that, and the point being back to kind of the original purpose of the segment. I think Nikolaj Ehlers, this is the number one question I think on people's minds, not just Jets fans, but also Jets management and coaching, with Nikolaj Ehlers, kind of what's going to happen with him. And again, the Jets are in the middle of a playoff race right now, so this is something that they're going to be thinking more of in training camp next September.
This is the problem you're going to have with the AHL Winnipeg. That's why I asked him the question. You're going to have everybody go, you're going to have everybody talking about these AHL guys and trying to rush them and calling out the NHL guys. Like, if you have the fourth line of the Jets right now,
right,
which Coach Paul Maurice never plays, and you have an AHL team in town, that's all it's going to be. The pressure, the guys on the fourth line. It's just, people aren't going to want to be here.
The most popular
players aren't going to want to be here if it's that intense. Only going to make it more intense.
Well, the most popular players are always the backup goaltender or the backup quarterback.
Right. I agree with what you're saying, Richie, but what I would say is, like, again, we know that teams have their own ideas and philosophies of when players should get into the NHL, and we know the Detroit Red Wings have done a really good job of it, but sometimes they almost leave their players in the AHL too long.
Do they?
I think, you could say that a guy like Tomas Tatar, for example, could have been in the NHL earlier, for example. I can't go over 20 years of pro. But I'm just saying, I think we'd agree that they probably have the best track record of developing players, right? In the NHL, one of the best, right?
Yes, I would say that.
So I think with Nikolaj Ehlers, or as Richie mentioned, you know, the kind of the dilemma of, you have guys that are having good AHL years for the, let's call them the Moose next year.
Sure.
And then there's going to be pressure on, for example, Scott Kosmachuk gets called up if Matt Halaschuk is struggling on the fourth line. But you'd have to think, or you'd hope, I should say, that the Jets are going to stick to what their original plan was for that prospect. Because I think they've stuck to their plan for certain prospects. And that's why I think there's 0% chance we see Connor Hellebuck in the NHL this year. Just for the simple fact of the matter is, I don't think they plan to have him in the NHL this year. Unless there was an injury.
I agree. I mean, they certainly haven't planned to have him in the NHL this year. I'm not convinced it's a terrible idea to have him come up and play a couple games for the Jets this year.
Who, Hellebuck?
Yeah. I'm not convinced it's a terrible idea. He's obviously
talking about throwing someone to the Wolves. I mean, a guy that has no NHL experience coming in during a playoff push, that's scary to me.
I'm saying, I probably wouldn't do it in the heart of the playoff push, but if they continue to fall out of the playoffs, I wouldn't, as a reward.
Does it really matter? Like, he's a young player. He'll play next year.
No, does it really matter? No. I mean, it's just my opinion that I think I don't think that calling him up now with 14 games to go and you're 1 point out.
I can't even believe it's being discussed. It boggles my mind.
Really? You're that surprised by it?
Yes.
I'm surprised that you're that surprised, to be honest. These are people that are, the goaltending has been the biggest Achilles heel, the biggest weakness on this team since the All-Star break. The goaltending has been atrocious. Why are you surprised?
Rich, I think part of this, and this is...
Every time these players struggle or you're going to just call up the next guy and you're going to throw... Is there not a development process there? That's why, I don't think they're even considering calling him up. I don't think that's crossed their mind.
And the thing, the argument has been, well, look at what Devin Dubnyk and Andrew Hammond are doing. But what I would say to that is, why did those guys get the opportunity? Injuries.
Chuck Fletcher said it himself. The Devin Dubnyk's been a complete... He's been lucky. I mean, nobody expected that. He's been very fortunate.
No, but I'm just saying the argument for calling Connor Hellebuck up is... Look at how good, unexpectedly, goalies have done. But what I'm saying is that Hammond and Dubnyk were signed and called up because of injuries, not because of two of their starting goalies struggling, right?
And another thing about that is Hammond is developing, or has been playing, obviously, for a long time. But, for example, Dubnyk is going to Arizona where there's no pressure. He's able to refine his game, change it up, the tutelage of Sean Burke, and then he's able to come and then he's able to play in a market with pressure. He plays in Edmonton and Edmonton, the pressure was just too much for him. I know the coaching wasn't great and all that stuff, development wasn't great, but let's be honest here, it's tougher.
So if Pavlik or Hutchinson were to get injured,
then it's different. I'm talking about if there's two healthy goalies, which there are.
Well, I know, but
then he's the next guy on the depth chart.
Right.
But I mean, right now, you're suddenly just drop him in there?
Well, I mean, if it's good enough to do it, if it's good enough to do it, if there's an injury, why isn't it good enough to do it if you think it's going to improve your team? Or you think it might not, you're saying it might not improve your team. which is a very valid,
I just don't think anybody really knows except for the staff of the team.
I think there's that, Richie, and I think there's a good chance that if Connor Hellebuck comes in and struggles, not only have you kind of shattered his confidence a little bit, not completely, but a little bit. What are you saying to Andre Pavlik? Like,
what are you saying to marketing him? You want to market him.
Now Andre Pavlik all of a sudden what do you send him down or just put him in the press box? I'm just saying, I'm not saying that it's not, it's something that I think is not ridiculous to think of. I just don't think the plan for Connor Hellebuck was ever for him to play in the NHL unless there was an injury.
Well, I agree with you. That certainly wasn't the plan, but I mean, if he's the guy you have to call up if there's an injury, you know, and you want to make the playoffs, why, you know, if he's good enough to play when there's an injury, why isn't he good enough to play when there's, when you think it's going to improve your team?
Every time Michael Hutchinson's numbers were incredible halfway through the year. Every time a guy goes through 20 games of bad play, is something going to change for the next guy?
No, I'm not saying that I just don't think it's completely ridiculous. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen. And I don't think it's their plan. But if it was to happen, I wouldn't think it's as crazy as other people are saying.
When the third line guy doesn't have a goal in 15 games, everybody in this town is going to be calling for the first line guy in the AHL team to be called up.
Yeah, probably.
That's a problem, I think.
Well, then, I mean, I think that's a valid point, certainly. And I'm probably completely wrong when it comes to
Hellebuck. You don't want the development of your players rushed.
Well, there's nothing to be wrong about. I mean, Connor Hellebuck was an excellent goaltender in NCAA, and he's been excellent this year. There's nothing to be wrong about. The only thing that's unknown is if he can bring that to the NHL. So you're not right or wrong.
Well, I mean, I'm probably wrong in that there's a possibility it'll happen. I think that's where I would say. I mean, I think you're right. You make a good point, though, Richard, where people are going to call for the next guy up in the AHL immediately upon there being a struggle on the big team next year. Let's head to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN 1290.ca.
You were saying about, I guess, does this count as an early 90s song for Remus playing? Does this count as a 60s song?
This is late 90s, early 2000s.
I didn't pick this one, guys.
Okay.
Actually, Remus, what year was this? 2000 something.
Well, not the original.
I didn't late 90s.
No, this is Lenny.
I know this is Lenny. Welcome back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by our friends at Not Auto Corp. Be sure to visit their beautiful new luxury auto and art gallery at the corner of Waverly and McGilvery. For more information, check them out online at notautocorp.com.
Starting to see some convertibles out there. The weather's so nice.
Beautiful, beautiful day outside.
Maybe some of those are from Not.
I'm sure they are. The nicest ones, I'm sure, are from Not. There's no doubt about that. Anyways, I want to go around the league, talk about some news and notes. We sort of started the show off with the budding rivalry, or not even the budding rivalry, the rivalry coming to light between Joe Thornton and Doug Wilson. You think this sinks the San Jose Sharks this year? Could this be a rallying point in the dressing room of everybody against us against them, them being the front office?
I mean, it's just a mess there. I can see your point, Drew, us against them. Us against them is usually the coach, though. So that's why I asked David Pollock, you know, where's Todd McClellan's stand? He's got to communicate with Doug Wilson. He's also got to communicate with the players. So it's kind of an odd arrangement that way. Joe Thornton, I mean, if you're going to hitch your wagon to Joe Thornton, good luck. I just don't think you're going to succeed in terms of winning at the National Hockey League playoff level. I still think this is a team that's kind of going sideways. And while I do side with Joe Thornton in this battle that they had. I think that Doug Wilson is airing dirty laundry.
Let me read the quotes, because when we interviewed David, we didn't have an opportunity to actually read the full quotes. Here's Doug Wilson. This was to a group of season ticket holders, and with David Pollock in the room, David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News. So with a reporter in the room, here's the quote from Doug Wilson about Joe Thornton. He cares about the game so much. The reason we took the C off of him, the captaincy, Joe carries the weight of the team on his shoulders, and he's got such a big heart that when stress comes on him, he lashes out at people, and it kind of impacts them. The pressure and stress I felt was getting to Joe, and I sat him down and said we need other players to step up and share this. He got it. He didn't like it, but he got it, and he understood it. David Pollock, like any good reporter, goes to Joe Thornton and asks him for his comment about Doug Wilson's comments. Here's Joe Thornton about Doug Wilson's comments. Quote, Doug should shut his mouth. All I've got to say is I've been here every day working hard. I haven't taken a sabbatical. He just needs to stop lying, shut his mouth. Here's Doug Wilson in response.
Boom.
Yeah, boom is right. Here's Doug Wilson in response to Joe Thornton's response.
I'd like to see more of that on the ice.
Quote.
Seriously.
And this is being told, this is as per CSNCalifornia.com. Quote, if he's got an issue, he knows exactly where I am, and I'll be glad to talk to him about it. There's zero issue here. I was asked a question at a season ticket holder function, and my response was to do my job and be accountable to our season ticket holders and tell the truth. It's nothing I haven't said before.
He's accumulated pieces. Doug Wilson's done a nice job of having a competitive team for a long time and accumulating pieces. And if you are happy with limited success on a long-term basis, giving yourself a chance to theoretically win the cup, then you can like what Doug Wilson's done. But if clearly Doug Wilson is showing you he's out of touch with what's going on there. I think he has been for some time. He did the same thing to Patrick Marleau. These guys don't... There's a lack of respect there. And I think there's a lack of relationship. And I would hazard to guess the best teams in the National Hockey League, the general managers have very good relationships with their best players. They take their input as to what the team needs. They get the pulse of the roster. And this is showing you that there's a complete discord there. And I think Doug Wilson's in the wrong here. And I think he's done a poor job of transitioning this team. And I would be surprised if Doug Wilson is running the team after the season.
Yeah, you have to think that, Richie, because as David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News mentioned, he broke the story. We had him on during the first hour today. He thinks that Joe Thornton's going to be there this year, and you probably have to think Patrick Marleau is also going to be there next year. Obviously, they have 2 years left on the contracts that they signed last year. But how bad is the timing of this, Richie? You have the San Jose Sharks, and they might be, I guess, on the outside looking in right now, but they're only 3 points behind the LA Kings for the last wild card spot, and they have just as many regulation wins as the LA Kings. So the San Jose Sharks might be struggling, but they're right in the thick of a playoff race. And how is it ever good when you have the veteran, former captain of a team telling the general manager to shut his mouth?
I mean, through the media.
There's no matter, exactly, through the media. This isn't like he's saying this, Drew, to, you know, somebody and they overheard it. He said this to the San Jose media. So to me, no matter how you spin it, this isn't good, and there is some type of discord, not only between Joe Thornton and Doug Wilson. As Richie mentioned, I think there's a disconnect between Doug Wilson and his team. So you're talking about Patrick Marleau. You're talking about other members of the team. The fact that the players had to go to the general manager and say, don't trade Antti Niemi, a goalie who might not be the best goalie in the NHL, but he's a goalie who's won a Stanley Cup, and you haven't shown any, I guess, sign that you're going to bring in a goaltender who's better than him. To me, that shows you that there's some disharmony in the organization as a whole. And I agree with Rich. I think that this team may have been in the playoffs now for the last 10 years. But I think when you're talking about the San Jose Sharks, you have a lot of good players. Couture, Pavelski's still relatively
young.
That's
great.
But are there years of being a contender over?
It's bizarre, too. Oh, yeah, I think so. But it's bizarre, too, in that, you know, you could say, well, Joe Thornton, Doug Wilson basically said, Joe Thornton want to trade you, and Joe Thornton said, sorry, I don't want to be traded.
That was in the summer.
Yeah, maybe you can say because he's comfortable in San Jose. Maybe you could say because he knows his reputation as not being a winner in the playoffs, kind of Peyton Manning-esque without the Super Bowl, and having regular season success. And, you know, what his take is, I want to do it here. I don't care. I want to do it here. The other perspective would be, why do you want to be somewhere where nobody, the guy who runs the team doesn't want you? But yet, Doug Wilson... Did you need to see the team lose to the Kings after being up 3-0 to decide that Joe Thornton wasn't going to take you there? You've had him there for 10 years, and you gave him a no-move clause and signed him to the extension last year. So it's like, do you not have the foresight? How quickly is the plan changing? It's very odd arrangement there. I mean, I just don't understand what's going on. And I know the owner is a little bit absentee, and I'm not sure if he even lives there. I'm not sure what his story is there.
Yeah,
but
that's not clearly a bad thing, generally.
Yeah, clearly there's a lack of... Well, I don't know, Drew. It seems like there's a lack of cohesion in terms of the whole organization, and it's coming apart.
I believe it lives in Germany, if I'm not mistaken.
It's a lack of cohesion, Drew. And it's also a power struggle that I think you're seeing. Yeah. I mean, after these comments have come out, and you just read them, Drew.
Mm-hmm. I mean, those aren't comments you hear between a player and a general manager. Very often.
I can't remember. I've never heard that before.
A player telling the general manager to stop lying and shut his mouth?
In the 6 years we've been doing this radio show, I don't remember ever hearing that, or even before that. Drew,
In the heat of a playoff race.
Exactly. And I think that if I don't see any scenario that both of those guys are back. So as Richie mentioned, I think regardless if the San Jose Sharks make the playoffs, how did Doug Wilson and Joe Thornton both coexist next year?
Unless they win the cup, they're not coexisting.
Especially if they don't.
They got to win the cup.
Well, there's still.
Otherwise, it's going to be maybe go to the finals.
And I don't think anybody thinks this team's winning the cup.
And I would say it's a long shot for them even to make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know that they're still in it, but I mean, if you pick all the teams that are still battling out for the final, wild card spots, you would not expect that the San Jose Sharks are going to leap over everybody and get in there. I would say.
On that point, the San Jose Sharks play the Chicago Blackhawks this afternoon.
Yeah.
As we talked to David Pollock about,
starts in 20 minutes.
But after that, which is very odd for this time of year. They have 8 games coming up on the road. So, I mean, they're going on the road now for 8 straight.
And they've been better on the road.
One of those is the Jets, and they do have the Leafs, which is obviously a weak team. But you've got the Red Wings, you've got the Penguins, you've got the Senators who are competing still hard. So mm-hmm. It's not an easy schedule for them.
Doug Wilson used to play his hockey in Winnipeg.
Seven straight road games, not 8.
Doug Wilson, he used to play his hockey in Winnipeg.
Yeah, played here from like 14 to 15 or 16 or something, yeah.
Like his formative
his
formative hockey.
Mm-hmm. I kind of wonder though, Drew, pardon me, Rich, with Doug Wilson, he's been the GM for quite a long time there. You got to think, maybe they need to make a change there because, as you mentioned, maybe he's lost a little bit of touch with what's going on, where his team is going.
Well, it's just like you not notice Joe Thornton wasn't going to lead you to where you want to be and you suddenly gave him another extension. Like, the plan changes too often. When the plan changes that often, you have a problem.
To me, the part where he says I have to be accountable to the season ticket holders. Come on. I mean, that doesn't mean anything. I mean, you're a general manager of an NHL team. You can talk your way around a question.
And you're embarrassing your captain when you strip him. And it's the second time you've done it.
Also, the face of your franchise for the bulk of the last decade.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Joe Thornton. You can criticize him for the lack of playoff success. But he certainly
justifiably so.
But he's been the face of your franchise. He's been a very good soldier for your franchise.
Yeah, he's a good guy. Like the thing about when I say that, and I've been critical of Joe Thornton's playoff performance, but I also qualify by that saying he's supposed to be as good of a guy as you're going to meet. With fans and media, he's very friendly, he's polite and all that stuff. And he's probably very well liked by his teammates, as far as I know, and by opposing players.
He's probably the best quote in hockey.
I think that good team, quote. Drew, has really suffered from year after year. And this goes back to this goes back 10 years. This team, I think, is sick of losing year after year. And when you think about Joe Thornton coming, remember when he was traded from Boston, he had that great year, and Jonathan Chichu had 56 goals. I'm talking about like 2005, 2008, those years when they really had, I think, the best chance to win a Stanley Cup.
Yeah, they blew all their chances.
I think this team is just tired of it, and they don't really have any more excuses. And Joe Thornton, lost his cool. We're told last year when they lost to the LA Kings in the first round. I agree with Rich. I think stripping the captaincy of Joe Thornton was the wrong move.
It's certainly a game that the Jets fans will watch on the out-of-town scoreboard. It starts in about 20 minutes' time, the Blackhawks at the Sharks. Mm-hmm. Also tonight on the out-of-town scoreboard, the Leafs are at the Canucks. Well, good luck, Jets fans, if you think the Leafs are going
to
do you any favors at this point.
Yeah,
after,
back-to-back.
On a second half of back-to-back, they could play a game every week and they'd still mail it, and these guys want that season to be over with and are embarrassing their franchise so badly. Minnesota at St. Louis, that's a second half of back-to-back for the Wild, having lost last night at home to the Ducks. And the Flames are at the Colorado Avalanche, and the Predators at the Kings. So a lot of good scoreboard watching,
yeah.
So certainly for Jets fans to keep an eye on. A couple of afternoon games, their finals. Detroit goes into Philadelphia and gets absolutely schmeiced. 7-2 Philadelphia over the Detroit Red Wings. Obviously just a bad game for the Red Wings, and I'm sure they'll bounce back strong. And then in Pittsburgh, no Crosby for the game. Malkin leaves the game early with an injury. Means no offense for the Penguins. They lose 2-0 to Boston. And all of a sudden, the Boston Bruins that Ezzy and I had written off so early on in the season, they're now the first wild card team in the Eastern Conference.
We didn't write them off. I said they'd make the playoffs, but their window was closing.
Well, they're now the first team in the wild card, leapfrogging over the Washington Capitals, tied in points, a game in hand on the Capitals, the same number of regulation wins.
And they don't even have David Krejci, gentlemen.
Yeah. The Boston Bruins all of a sudden are the Los Angeles Kings of the Eastern Conference.
I really like that Ryan Spooner. He's a good player.
Watch out for the Bruins. I mean, now...
Now watch out for the Bruins.
I just said that I threw him under the bus earlier in the season. So I'm not changing my tune entirely. I'm altering... I'm changing my tune, but I am still recognizing the error in my ways from earlier in the year. you know, you could be a little more accountable.
I'm accountable on this show.
Bull.
I thought the Minnesota Wild were out of it completely. I've said that before, and I was completely wrong about that.
Okay, I'll grant you that. Let's go to break. When we come back, one final segment. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
On TSN1290.ca.
I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm not familiar with much of Gaslight Anthem. I assume this is them, Richard?
Mm-hmm.
So you're happy that Remus played them, but how disappointed are you that he played them in this spot where he would normally be playing Bruce Springsteen?
I'm okay, Drew, because if you're a Gaslight Anthem fan, you know that the lead singer and the whole band is from New Jersey, like Springsteen, so there's a connection there.
Ah, so would you say that? Would you say Bruce is a mentor of theirs?
Yeah, for sure.
What do you think about Pavlik's new mask?
It's awesome. I love that mask.
It doesn't really matter. He could stink it up on the ice for the rest of the year, as long as he's
Richie,
got
are
that
you
going to
steal Pavlik's mask?
Man, oh, it'd be great. I mean, I don't play goal, yeah. But
I got to say, though, I wasn't a big Springsteen fan, which I should be because I'm a Devils fan, New Jersey fan, but we saw them in Minneapolis, and it was incredible. 3 hours, was it, they played for? It was great.
Yeah. At least.
Yeah.
It was.
Lawless and Hustler were there, too.
Were they there at that show? Were they there at the show?
They were there that show.
They were there.
I don't remember.
Gary actually...
Gary's got that restraining order on me.
I tried to stage dive, and Gary actually moved out of the way. He could have caught me. Huss tried to catch me, but Gary actually just moved out of the way.
Yeah, it's understandable. I mean, I think that's probably a good decision on his part. Anyways, let's get to one final segment on this Saturday afternoon. It's called Rapid Fire. New York Rangers will be without defenseman Kevin Klein for the majority of the rest of the regular season after he injured his arm in Wednesday's game against the Washington Capitals. How serious of an injury do you think this is for the Rangers to lose Klein?
Well, yeah, he's an important guy because, you know, he's your solid right side guy. Now, you have a lot of talent on the back end there, but your talent is more so offensive than defensive, right? If we weren't talking about the best defense 1-6 in the league, which the Rangers have, in my opinion, I think it'd be more of a problem because you still have guys like Girardi and Staal and McDonough who can lock it down. But he's important to them. He's been more valuable than guys like Boyle, and Yandel's a really good offensive player, but Klein's a more secure two-way guy. Not the most talented player in the world, but that's a loss. And, I think especially if they end up playing a kind of a more physical team in the first round, they're probably going to play a speed team in Islanders or Pittsburgh, so it'd be maybe less of an issue because I don't know how much of a matchup problem that would be, but it's an injury that hurts. He's been more important to that team than people may think.
The Rangers are probably actually in the driver's seat for the President's Cup trophy right now, having played the fewest amount of games in the NHL at 66, tied with Carolina.
To me, they're the best team in the National Hockey League right now. If you
the
watch
Rangers?
Them play, yeah. If you watch them play, as either well, they don't even have
best
Lundqvist. Talbot's very good. Their 1-6 defense is excellent, and they have very good forwards.
12-1-2 since February 10th.
He's an excellent coach too, Vigneault. I think they're right now. That doesn't mean that later on, but right now, I think they're the best team in the league.
See them getting knocked out in the first round.
I can see any team getting knocked out in the first round. It's probably I really could.
I mean,
this is a free for all.
No, but back to the Richie's point. I mean, you've got Ryan McDonough, Dan Girardi. They acquired Keith Yandel. I mean, they got Dan Boyle. Matt Hunwick is the guy that'll pick up those minutes from Kevin Klein. Drew, it's a really good defense, as Richie mentioned. So,
the best team in the league.
Yeah.
With less than a month to go in the NHL's regular season, there is no clear-cut favorite to win the NHL's Art Ross Trophy. Jonathan Tavares has 72 points, mm-hmm. Ovechkin 70, Crosby 70, Nicklas Backstrom 69, Malkin 68, and Voracek 67. Who do you think will end up winning, and how many points will they have?
All I know is the point totals are depressingly low.
Yeah.
They really are. And we need to find a way to get more offense in the game.
Well, expansion is a good solution to that.
It's a concern, for sure. If you're asking for the favorite here to take this home, I think probably John Tavares, especially in light of Crosby and Malkin both leaving or not playing today in Pittsburgh. I think Tavares is ready to take that next step and make a push for that spot. I think the offensive totals, you're looking at Tavares leading the league guys with 72 and 70, and that's such a low total.
Richie, mm-hmm. last year Crosby had 104 and Getzlaff had 87. Getzlaff was second. So you're talking about 17 points separating first and second. That's why I love this race. I agree with Rich, though. It's probably going to be, I would say, 85 to 90 points, maybe.
I think you're going to take it home with 90 this year.
Yeah, 90 points. So that's pretty low. That's one of the lowest totals we've seen in most recent memory. I think to me, I mean, again, there's a lot of players that have the ability to score 4 or 5 points in a game. And
90
really,
points.
That could win it, Rich, with a little bit of time left. I think when Sidney Crosby's there, I think you always got to go with Sidney Crosby, don't you, to win it?
The league leader will probably have 90 points. Gretzky's, what does that say about the offense of the game?
Well, it says that the game's watered down and there's no offense anymore. Gretzky used to have 90 points after 12 games.
Yeah, you need to be able to, that needs to be, like, you know, I know the GMs are meeting here, but there needs to be discussion in terms of creating more offense in the league. I don't want it to be by artificial penalty calling, because I think the players have adjusted to the way the game is played now. I don't know if that's goaltender pads. I don't know if it's coaching rules. Well, you know, I remember Bob Gainey talking years and years ago, not that long ago, about blocking shots being a penalty, not being able to lie down and block shots. So there needs to be something here to create offense. And I'm open to ideas. I think, you know, you want to get the best minds in the league, Ken Hollins and even the Scotty Bowmans, whoever have consulting roles, to talk about this. Because you can't have National Hockey. I mean, you watch the NFL. In the way they, you know, it's kind of artificially creating offense, but they're still creating offense. And you watch the NBA guys and the hand check rule and different things there, and even baseball trying to get rid of the strike zone being as big as it is. They're trying to find ways to create offense, and I feel like the National Hockey League is falling behind in that respect.
Well, either a bigger goalie or maybe they're going to go 3-on-3 for the regular season.
But that won't do, you know. You don't want to change the fabric of the game. You don't want to be like, okay, let's go to 4-on-4 hockey permanently. Well, but is it smaller goaltender padding? Like, even some of these goalies, they lie down and their pads pop up. That's an issue. Like, this is, we could have a whole show on creating offense.
Sure. Last night, Minnesota Wild goaltender Devan Dubnyk started his 26th game in a row against the Ducks, marking the NHL's longest consecutive start streak since Jonas Hiller got 32 in a row for the Ducks in 2011-12. Is Mike Yeo playing Dubnyk too much, and can he sustain his play down the stretch? I mean, lost last night, only gave up 2 goals.
Well, no, yeah, the Ducks won 2-1. Yeah. Devan Dubnyk has been one of the greatest stories, in addition to Andrew Hammond. He really has. I worry a little bit because Devan Dubnyk hasn't done this in the NHL before, where he started this many straight games, and he's been incredible, and he seems to just keep getting wins and having low-scoring games. He doesn't give up a lot of goals as of late. So there's a little bit of concern that he can sustain this in the playoffs, Rich, because he's never done this in the playoffs before.
You know what? They're riding house money.
Sure.
Just go for it. Why not?
The truth is, I think you can probably afford to give Dubnyk a game off at this point. You're in the playoffs. You've got, a 3-point lead.
Don't worry about that break later.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. One more rapid fire question before we go to cheers and jeers. The Buffalo Sabres announced they were getting rid of their third jersey, known colloquially as the Turd Burger. The blue and yellow jersey seemed to be hated immediately upon it being unveiled.
It was ugly.
Leading to Sabres president Ted Black uttering this quote in 2013. If it doesn't sell, it won't really mean anything to our bottom line. It's a third jersey. If it's a turd burger, I'll have to put it on a bun and eat it. It's the way it is. What does that quote mean, and what word would you use to describe the turd burger jersey?
I didn't think the jersey was that bad, to be honest with you. That quote is weird, by the way. there have been worse jerseys in the NHL, I'll put it this way. So it might not be the best jersey in the NHL, but I don't think it's that bad either.
I think a bunch of these teams should go back to the... I don't know what that meant, and I'm not going to pretend like I do. But I think lots of these teams should just go back to the retro jerseys and call it a day, because some of these new ones are ugly.
Yeah. I would agree with you there. Let's finish it up the only way we know how, with cheers and jeers. Ezra Ginsberg,
you know,
how are you going to cheer the New Jersey Devils today?
No. I love these stories where players come out of nowhere and they accomplish a lot, especially late in the season. I got to cheer Andrew Hammond. To me, this has been the greatest story in the NHL this year, and they've had the whole Hamburglar nickname, and they gave out hamburgers at the Canadian Tire Center. It's just unbelievable how he's come in there, and he's really given the Ottawa Senators a chance to make the playoffs. I know they're 5 points out of it, and they most likely won't get into the playoffs unless they go on a crazy run here. But he's just been a great story, a guy at 27 coming into the NHL and has just had some incredible games and give them some really good goaltending.
Richard?
I'm going to jeer the Toronto Maple Leafs and the attention that they get on the number of media outlets that we're subjected to. This team is not worth the time, really, on this radio station, but more so on the television networks and breaking it down, what's wrong with them. Everything's wrong with them. Let's talk about other teams. Let's talk about the good stories, as you mentioned. Put more time into that. Feature stories and storytelling about guys like Johnny Gaudreau and Sean Monahan, guys who were good stories and the guys in Winnipeg, different things like that, as opposed to just continuing to go on and on and on about guys like Nazem Kadri and different guys who aren't following the rules of their teams and are the Leafs who are embarrassing the league.
I'll wrap up cheers and jeers. I'm going to cheer the good people at Limoud Winnipeg, which is a festival of learning taking place starting tonight and tomorrow at the Asper Jewish Community Campus.
Are they going to be jeering you tomorrow, Drew?
They might be jeering me tomorrow. They've invited me on behalf of Illegal Curve to give a presentation on the history of Illegal Curve. So if you're looking for something to do tomorrow afternoon or all weekend long, it's open to the public. Head over to the Asper Jewish Community Center. I'll be presenting at 1:30 tomorrow, an hour-long presentation on the history of Illegal Curve. So we're going deep into the archives, pulling out some old clips from some old shows over the past 6 years, and really going to find some interesting things about Illegal Curve, I think, during this presentation.
Tell them our story, Drew.
I'm going to tell them our story. God help us all. That's it for this Saturday afternoon here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. A big thank you to our guest, Tim Campbell from the Winnipeg Free Press, Chris Dingman, Tampa Bay Lightning color analyst, and David Pollock from the San Jose Mercury News. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Royal Sports, and Not Auto Corp. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Remus and analysts Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Hustler and Lawless are next.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.